Hello, this is a Fusion View podcast. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Yang Mei Ui. I'm a Malaysian-born writer living in London. I've published two novels with Hodder and Stoughton in the UK. On my blog Fusion View, I have posts and podcasts discussing writing and the publishing industry. One of my readers wrote in and asked my advice about how to get published in the UK. So I created a series of posts called Getting Published, where I look at all the different steps that it takes for you to complete your novel and take it through the various stages in order to get it published, such as getting an agent, going on through to the publishing stage, and discussions with your publisher. As part of my continuing exploration of writing and publishing and the processes of telling a story, on this podcast today, I talk to Terry Bailey, who's a lecturer in script writing at the University of Aberystwyth.
Hi there, Terry.
Hi, Yang Mei.
Now, I know that you teach script writing. Mm-hmm. But what exactly is it that you teach, and what does it involve?
Well, I teach to undergraduate media students. I teach them 2 years of script writing. And I also teach a one-year full-time MA program in script writing. In my first year undergraduate module, I put a lot of emphasis on structure and character. In fact, those students don't even write a script that year. I tell them there's no point in writing a script until they've learned to structure a story properly. So they learn to write outlines based on their structure.
So there they arrive all fresh and ready to go, and you say, no script writing.
That's it. They all arrive expecting to write a script, and I put a damper on that immediately. They do get to write a script in the next year, and then by the time we get to the MA program, they can be writing an entire film. And we also get a lot more specific about detailed things like genre, which is something that I think is probably too complex to get into too deeply at a practical undergraduate level.
Right, so it's structured in a way almost like an apprenticeship. They start off with the basics and they develop their skills.
Absolutely. It's structured like a story arc of a film.
Okay. Now you're starting to use technical language.
I am.
Right, but what you're teaching relating to screenwriting is it has wider applications for writers in general, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it's really more about story structure, and story structure applies to almost anything you might want to do in the media. There's an anecdote I use with my students about a time I was listening to the program Feedback on BBC Radio 4. That's the one where listeners write in to comment on the output of the network. And one lady wrote in to complain, and she was complaining about some interview she'd heard where, right at the end of the interview, the interviewer had asked a really difficult question, a question the guest couldn't answer. So the guest was left speechless, and the interviewer said, "Thank you very much." Well, the listener was livid. How dare they treat this poor interviewee that way? You know, she must have felt awful on her way home from the studio, having been left speechless like that. So what Feedback did is they brought in the producer in question, and that person explained that, in fact, that particular question that had offended the lady so much had actually come somewhere in the middle of the interview. And then before the broadcast, they'd restructured the program to make it more interesting. So that is pure story structure right there in a program that listeners believe is live. So when I start teaching my undergraduate students, I tell them, we're going to study how to tell a good story by trying to write popular Hollywood-style films. But the course isn't really specifically about how to write for film. That's our common denominator. It's mostly about telling a good story.
So really underlying all kinds of narrative art forms, novels, short stories, film, radio plays, even radio interviews, it's all about telling a good story.
I think so.
That's the underpinning idea.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the elements of a good story?
The elements of a good story. The first one really makes for a bad piece of advice, and that is, have a really good idea, which the reason that's a bad piece of advice is that nobody knows what a really good idea is until they hear it. There are some things you can say about good ideas. Good ideas tend to be easy to grasp. So everyone should understand it without a lot of explanation. An idea, especially a creative idea, like a fictional idea, should deal with a universal theme, you know, something everyone can relate to. It should have something about it that's fresh and new. And if you're writing fiction, let's say a feature film, you have to remember that what you're doing has got to sustain for 2 hours. It's got to be an idea that can last. And for a novel as well, you're talking about, 100,000 words?
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. I'd say another really important element of a good story is the relationship between the story's hero and the plot. And I'll explain that. On one level, a story can be simply entertainment. But on another level, it's metaphor. A writer is using a particular narrative with particular characters in order to say something, you know, about life. But the thing is, a dramatic writer can't just throw some characters on a screen and let them talk about some big message, because that's preachy, and preaching is boring. So the writer is trying to get across his or her point of view by setting up a dramatic situation in which a character goes on some sort of journey. It could be a literal, physical journey, Frodo Baggins going to the land of Mordor, but it doesn't have to be. What it's definitely going to be is an emotional journey or a journey of self-discovery.
So you might have a story, I can't think of any films in particular, but it's quite common to have the guy who's a bit of a jerk, he's a bit selfish, he lives in a messy apartment, he meets a girl, and through the evolution of that story, he might discover his more sensitive side.
You put your finger on it, yeah. Because what you note a lot is, at the start of a film, we usually meet a character who is in some way damaged or incomplete or in need of something in his or her life. And then what usually happens, you say meets a girl, something happens, usually about 15 minutes into the film, some great big thing that upsets the balance of the hero's everyday life, whatever that is. It could be that new woman. It could be finding out that a meteor is going to hit the earth, but something happens. And that's where the plot of the film really starts. But as I've said, it's the relationship between that character and that plot that's important. So on the surface, the hero has got to work through the course of the story to try to restore balance. In other words, to fix whatever went wrong at the top of the film. But underneath that, what's got to happen is that the events of the story end up providing the hero with whatever that was that he or she needed on an emotional level. The thing that was missing in his or her life, that's what's going to be supplied by the story. So the way in which the hero solves not only the external problem, but his or her internal problem, is what causes the audience to come to understand the real message of the film. So the story's got to work on a level of pure plot, it's got to work on an emotional level for the character, and it's got to work as metaphor to convey a certain message, which is a lot for a story to accomplish, which brings us back to why it's so important to choose the right idea in the first place.
And in fact, what you're talking about is about film, which is a very modern media. But as you were speaking, I was thinking about Charles Dickens's Great Expectations, where Pip starts off as a young boy. He's an orphan. He's looked after by his horrible sister and a kindly brother-in-law. And he's very lonely. He goes off into the marshes. He meets Magwitch, the convict. And Great Expectations is all about his expectations. And his loneliness and his need for approval, a place in the world. And later on when he grows up, he is given a fortune. And in the meantime, in contrast to meeting Magwitch, he meets Estella and Miss Havisham. And there, Miss Havisham's Expectations is one of the most haunting in literature. And it's about how he deals, his expectations as to where the money comes from and how he deals with all that. And that provides the impetus for the story. And it seems to follow that arc that you've just described.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing new. Dickens knew this 150 years ago.
Well, which brings me to my next question, actually, because you've been talking about Hollywood blockbusters, meteor striking the earth. I'm a writer. Let's say I'm writing something literary and serious, And what I'm interested in writing is about my, you know, universal themes, my message, being a creative artist. Structure and all that stuff that you're talking about, it's fine for populist things like thrillers and comedies and formulaic blockbusters. But how would it apply to something that I'm writing that's literary?
I think it does. We often approach literary fiction with, you know, the same kind of unquestioning reverence that we used to approach going to church or something. You know, we treat it as if it's some precious and fragile delicacy, and it's going to crumble if we breathe on it too heavily. But even if you choose to write literary fiction rather than genre fiction, or you want to write a novel instead of a screenplay, you're still usually trying to tell a story. Writers aren't doing themselves any favors if they say to themselves, you know, okay, I'm being literary now, so I shall sit here with an exquisitely pained expression on my face and wait for the muse to descend upon me. You know, the fact is, everything has a structure. It might be an appropriate structure, it might be an inappropriate structure, it might be interesting or dull, but it is there. So isn't it better to consciously create it rather than just trust that something's going to happen? And I'm not suggesting that literary fiction will or should look the same as a summer blockbuster, but I still believe that every writer has an obligation to keep the reader or viewer on board in some way.
Because at the end of the day, whether you're writing literary fiction or you're writing some cotton candy type of stuff, what you're asking for is your reader to, or your viewer to pay their money for the DVD or their cinema seat, or to buy the book, their hard-earned cash, and to spend time, their precious time, with you and your creative thing that you've done.
Absolutely. I'm sure you've had the experience. You might have found yourself reading a literary novel, and at first you're really enjoying it, you know, and then as the book goes on, you start to lose interest, and you say to yourself, well, wait a minute, this is a good book, it's a good writer, so why isn't it grabbing me anymore? And, you know, the precious literary answer might be, well, you're obviously not up to the task of appreciating literary fiction, and you should go back to John Grisham. But I don't think that's it. If a story stops engaging with you after you've settled into it, you know, if you no longer feel the urge to keep turning the pages, then maybe the writer didn't work hard enough on the spine of the story. In other words, the various bits of the story might be great, but the overall arc of the narrative just isn't strong enough. I mean, that happened to me just recently. I finished reading a book by, by a well-respected writer, and it was so episodic that I could have happily stopped reading at the end of virtually any chapter and not felt that I was missing anything.
Mm. Now, you've used the word arc twice. Hmm. Could you just explain that?
Yeah, it's essentially means the through line of the story. It's the spine that carries you from the beginning to the end in a nice, clear line. And that is the opposite of another word I just used, episodic, which is where things happen in little episodes or little vignettes that are not necessarily tied together in one clear, cohesive storyline.
So a couple of elements, just to summarize what we've been talking about, is that the good elements of a good story is a great idea and a strong arc, something that pulls you through, that makes you keep turning the pages, that
Absolutely.
Stops you from hitting the stop button on your DVD.
Right, yes. You know, to be brutal, there's very little fiction that is so enlightening that it's worth, you know, a tremendous amount of effort. You know, if you as a writer think that you're bestowing on your audience something so valuable that they'll push through your book or they'll stay with your film, whether you bore them or not, then, you know, well, congratulations on being a bigger genius than I am. But for the rest of us, I think we should probably, you know, pay a bit more attention to, you know, those aspects of structure that people analyze and talk about all the time, and consciously try to employ the ones that work, at least work for us, as well as doing all those other great things with symbol and metaphor and beautiful language. Because I think if you respect the narrative aspect of your story, you may find that you keep your audience engaging with you for longer and with more enjoyment as well.
So what about some practical tips? right, I'm now inspired by what you've got to say,
okay.
And you're not going to allow me to write my script yet or my novel. I need to sit down and write my outline. What practical tips have you got about that?
Well, what I'd first suggest you do is bone up on what people are saying these days about things like structure and character. There's no need to reinvent the wheel, or at least there's no need to start from scratch anyway. I'm sure you'll want to put your own spin on things as you go, but it's always a good idea to know what other people out there are talking about, especially since the people that you submit your work to ultimately will know this stuff.
And
you know,
so
whether you do or not, they do. So it's probably good that you do too. So I'd say get hold of some guidebooks, and there are some very good ones out there that teach you things like story structure and character and all of that. Read them. You don't have to agree with everything, but what you do need to do is understand the contexts in which people talk about this stuff.
And they might be?
They might be. One that I use with my first-year writing students is by a guy called Robert McKee, who's a really well-known film guru. And for years and years and years, he's done a very, very famous story structure seminar. And a few years back, he finally wrote a book called Story by Robert McKee. Now, it's got all the elements of what is known as the three-act structure, which is a really basic story structure. So that's a good place to start. That book's also strong on character. I also like a book by a writer called Christopher Vogler, V-O-G-L-E-R, which is called The Writer's Journey.
Mm-hmm.
What Vogler has done is he's taken Joseph Campbell's work on myth, especially Campbell's classic book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and he's reinterpreted the stages of what Campbell called the hero's journey to work for film. And Vogler is also really good at discussing character archetypes. There's an interesting way, if film specifically is your interest, there's an interesting way to structure a film through a series of sequences called, strangely enough, the sequence approach. And that was created by a Czech filmmaker known as Frank Daniel, who's dead now. But he's one of his students, a guy called Paul Galino, has written what's become the standard text for the sequence approach. So it's called Script Writing the Sequence Approach by Paul Galino. That's a good one to look into. I also like the work of a film teacher named John Truby, who hasn't written a book, but he does do audio courses and script writing software, and he's got a website, and that's www.truby.com. So all of that together would give you a lot of different viewpoints on story structure, and they don't all agree with each other. As I say, Robert McKee pushes the three-act structure. John Truby hates the three-act structure. So you're not going to get a cohesive view of things, but you're going to get a comprehensive one.
And presumably, as with anything, as a creative artist, writer, or filmmaker, you would read these books and pick and choose what works for,
yes,
you. And your,
make your own decisions.
Yeah.
What you cannot do is follow anybody else's pattern slavishly and treat it as paint by number. Mm. You can never do that. And that's a lot of the criticism that books like this get, is they say, oh, it's all paint by number. It just tells you where to plug in your emotional bits. And no, it doesn't. It tells you how some structures work. And from there, you're on your own, and you should be.
I think it's very interesting what you say, because when I was writing The Flame Tree, I started off with an outline and a synopsis and a structure. Because I found that really, you know, for a big thriller with lots of plot lines, different characters, I needed to know where I was going. I couldn't just sit down and, you know, start typing.
Yes.
And I had a blank wall in my study. My study had 12-foot ceilings. It was one of those with French windows, and this massive blank wall. And I got up onto a chair with loads of post-it notes, and I plotted the whole thing on this wall. And what was useful was I could see, by having too many post-it notes, say, in section one, compared to not enough post-it notes in, you know, the middle bit,
mm-hmm,
that it was top-heavy, and that I would have to restructure a bit, move some of the episodes along, move some of the motivation, change this, change that, so that I would end up with a balanced story, and it was very useful to be able to see the whole story on one wall.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I know that some other novelists use a whiteboard to have it all and capture it all so that they can see it in one sweeping view. Because sometimes when you actually start writing, you're stuck at the very, very low level of telling that particular story at that particular moment, and you kind of lose the big picture.
You can also get computer software programs now that act as your big wall.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, yeah. And you can plug in all of your scenes and you can rearrange them and do all sorts of things with them. So that's the high-tech version.
Good heavens. So now, what one film for you tells a good story that you would recommend that all writers should watch? And why?
For me is a good thing to say, because I think the first thing to say about that is there's never one film. Because it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, if you personally are attracted to romantic comedy, then Psycho is not going to help you, regardless of what a genius Hitchcock was. So the first thing I'd say, before answering the question, I'd say, if you have a particular genre that you like writing in, watch a lot of films in that genre, good ones and bad ones, and ask yourself why a certain film works or why a certain film doesn't work, because that's an education in itself. But me personally, I'm in my 40s now, and it's probably just my age. But whenever I think of good films, I think of ones from the early 1970s. To me, a great place to start is with the film Chinatown. That film was written by a genius of a scriptwriter named Robert Towne, and it was directed by Roman Polanski. It stars Jack Nicholson. It's not only a gripping story, but it's handled in a very literary way. One of the themes in the film is perception. It's about what we see and what we fail to see and seeing things the wrong way and so on. And Towne works in some wonderful and subtle metaphors that highlight that theme beautifully. And also, because we've got a lead character, the Nicholson character, his name is Jake Gittes, who doesn't always know as much as he thinks he knows, Towne makes a real use of what's called dramatic irony, which is where the audience knows more or sees more than the hero of the story does. So if you were interested in that sort of thing, what I'd recommend is watch the film Chinatown, then get a copy of the script, which you can get online, and read it, because it's a script that is well worth reading. One other from the same time period, probably one people are more familiar with, but I think The Godfather is a great film to study for a really well-handled character arc. And there's that word again, arc. Mm. One of the primary rules of film is that important characters have to undergo a change over the course of the film, and that's what's meant by character arc, the way the character changes over the course of the film. And in The Godfather, Al Pacino's character, his name's Michael Corleone, has a huge arc. He goes from being a clean-cut war hero to an emotionless, ruthless mafia boss, all in the course of a two-hour film. So how Francis Ford Coppola and Mario Puzo pull that one off is really remarkable. And for a writer, that's worth studying, too.
Well, Terry, thank you very much for
thank
taking
you,
time out to speak to me on Fusion View.
It's great. Thank you very much.
I was talking there to Terry Bailey, lecturer in script writing at the University of Aberystwyth. If you would like to hear more Fusion View podcasts, go to the Fusion View homepage at www.fusionview.co.uk and go to the podcasts section in the middle sidebar. To read my series on getting published, go to the category marked Getting Published in the far right sidebar. Thank you for listening. Bye.